Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Hello and welcome to the A24 Project here on the Nerd Party Network, where every 2 weeks we look at two films from the A24 filmography, and in between we bring you the interviews with the talent involved in front of and behind the camera. In this episode we review Mid-90s and Outlaws, and joining me on his skateboard is Dallas King. Welcome back, Dallas.
Groovy dude.
Cowabunga. Yeah. So, the coronavirus has hit nearly every single film release on the planet. So, A24 Hour News has absolutely nothing new to bring us at the moment. We don't even have new merch to talk about. Nothing. It's just been absolutely wiped out. But,
has it been 2 weeks? Has it been 5 days? How long have we been in this lockdown? Help me to recollect.
Exactly, it's been quality for A24 themed memes. It's been absolutely crazy to see what this has done on a daily basis, really, to kind of the film industry. You know, we were looking at sort of Saint Maud filling the James Bond slot, and then sort of the hubris, I think, from A24, where they thanked MGM for that, kind of came undone when all the cinemas closed. So there's no word yet on when Saint Maud will be released in cinemas, or will it go straight to on-demand services like a lot of other films are at the moment. It's really hard to say, and it's frustrating. It's a great film that really deserves to be seen by audiences, and hopefully it will be.
Yeah, I think A24 are going to hold back. I know they did say that they wanted First Cow to be seen on the big screen. I know Bobby doesn't seem the most cinematic of films, but I think they are committed to the cinematic experience, so I think they will be holding off. So I think we'll just have to make do with a few months of Lighthouse and Uncut Gem memes to keep us tiding over. Maybe they'll release some new flavours of candles, coronavirus flavour candles, post-apocalypse, maybe an It Comes at Night flavoured candle to keep us going.
Yeah, exactly.
See, I was ahead of the curve giving that one 5 stars, I tell you.
There you go. I mean, one of the popular memes that are going around at the moment is sort of the Midsummer Festival has been cancelled. However, here comes the good segue, is next week's interview might help you if you had plans to trek to Sweden, as we're joined by Claudia Chiney to discuss her role as Danny's suicidal sister, Terry, from Midsummer. So here's a small preview of that interview. So then you got approached for sort of the role of Danny's sister, Terry, which really launches Danny on her journey through this film. How did you get approached for that role?
Well, this is a very, very funny story, I think. So one day I was just on the set, and Taylor, he was Ari's assistant, just came to me, and I was like, okay, sure, he will ask me if where is, I don't know, somebody, where can he find the cafe, or should I just bring him a cafe or something. And instead of these questions, he asked me that, hey, how are you doing with acting? And I was like, oh, well, this is the question what I didn't expected, but, you know, I was kind of shocked. But I just taught him what I've done. So, as I just mentioned before, I'm from a very small town. So, there I was in the school, like in the drama club member for 8 years, but it's not really like big experience. So I just taught him this, and I was extra, and sometimes I did like a bigger part extra, but nothing special. And also my pronunciation is not good, and I just taught him this, and he was like, okay, but you don't have to talk, but you really look like Flo, because I don't know, maybe we just stand next to each other like a few days before, and I know that the actress who was originally casted, she couldn't come because of her theater work, because at that point they knew that who will play Terry, they need to travel to the US to shoot for a few days, and the originally casted actress couldn't go there, so they needed to find someone else. And it was quite an easy solution for them, because, you know, I was all the time on set. And, yeah, they thought that we look like each other a little bit. I don't know, maybe. So, yeah, and I was like, okay, why not? It's just a great opportunity. I'm really happy to take it, and I've never been to the US before, so it's going to be fun, sure. And it was fun.
So there we go. We get some behind the scenes stories of how someone goes from being sort of working on set to getting some one of the most kind of, you know, kind of important roles in the film that really kind of kickstarts everything. So that's definitely an interview to look forward to, I hope.
Absolutely, can't wait to listen to the whole thing. And I think you've got enough interviews in the bag to keep us going through this lean period of A24.
Exactly, yeah. So who knows what will come next. But what we do know that is coming next is our first film of today, Mid-90s. So Stevie is a sweet 13-year-old boy about to explode. His mum is loving and attentive, but a little bit too forthcoming about her romantic life, and his big brother is a violent bully. So Stevie searches his working-class Los Angeles suburb for somewhere to belong, and he finds that in the Motor Avenue skate shop. So Dallas, I know the answer to this one, but when did you first see Mid-90s? What was your expectations going in, and what was your reaction?
Well, I saw it at the Glasgow Film Festival last year, the opening film, with you, I think. So, yeah. My expectations were... I don't know. I'm not really sure what I was expecting. You know, this is Jonah Hill's directorial debut. I mean, I think by that point I'd maybe watched the trailer once. I was maybe kind of looking to surprise myself by what the film was. And I have to say that I really, really took to this film on first screening. And happily, now that it's available to watch on Netflix, UK, possibly in the US as well, but something to watch during lockdown. I enjoyed it just as much a second time round as well. What about yourself?
Yeah, I was quite excited for this one going in. It sort of been a period of time where sort of these A24 films that we've been kind of discussing lately hadn't been sort of really available to kind of catch in cinemas here, or sort of were like American releases but never made it over here. So Mid-90s was something I was kind of looking forward to. I was really curious to see what Jonah Hill would do as a sort of writing, directing talent. And yeah, I really enjoyed it. It surprised me quite a lot. Like, in some respects, the film was what I expected, you know, a sort of coming age story sort of set in a skate park and so on. But what I really liked was sort of the kind of the sweetness of the film, sort of this brotherly love between this kind of band of misfits in sort of LA. It avoided a lot of sort of the pitfalls of kind of coming of age films. Had a fantastic soundtrack that was unexpected. I thought most of it was going to be sort of like white people rapping. It wasn't that at all. You know, we got Seal, which was always great to hear on cinema speakers, and we had one of the most disturbing kind of sex scenes or sort of sexual scenes that we've got in an entire A24 film as well. So the film was certainly a real mishmash of interesting ideas, and one that got me excited to see what Jonah Hill would do next as a writer director.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think we mentioned it. I think I mentioned it during Lady Bird episode that I think Lucas Hedges is responsible for three movies that all feature really awkward sex scenes. But I think that was definitely up there with Glasgow Film Festival's one of its other opening or closing films, Annalisa, which also had an incredibly awkward sex scene between two puppets, and not in like a funny way like Team America. But yeah, I just remember being in the audience and it was just kind of like, oh, this is, I don't know how I'm supposed to feel about this. It's like, oh, good on Stevie, but also it's like, ew, that's no. But yeah, no, it was, I thought, yeah, like you say, it's incredibly sort of sweet and good-natured film. It could have gone one way, like you say, maybe if it had all been like soundtracked by Cypress Hill or something like that. But I think what I really liked about it was, if you hadn't told me that Jonah Hill had made this film, I would have assumed it was like it could have been a documentary from the mid-90s. I think it was really well shot. I think it was all shot on 16mm. I thought the look of it was fantastic. The soundtrack took you back to that era. I think it's like they had at one point in the house party scene they were playing Where Did You Sleep Last Night by Nirvana from the MTV Unplugged sessions, which is like, you know, one of those albums which everyone had in the mid-90s, I think. And it just took you back there immediately. It's like the older boys that Stevie plays with, you know, around with. I think he's played by Sonny Silchik in the film Stevie. He was also in Killing of a Sacred Deer. And I think the older kids, they just seemed like they were working in that skate shop and were asked to just hang out and do a film. And they just seemed so naturalistic. especially sort of the guy who plays Ray. I mean, Lucas Hedges and Catherine Watson are sort of like the name actors, but everyone else just seems like sort of extras. I think I know a couple of people who were maybe sort of from the skateboarding culture felt that it maybe wasn't the better film that year. I think a lot of people saw, I think there was another film called Skate Kitchen, which is also very good, and a lot of people sort of preferred that one. But I thought this one as a narrative piece rather than almost sort of like a document, I thought it was really well made.
Yeah, I prefer this one to Skate Kitchen by quite a bit of distance. I usually like a film where sort of like I'm not really particularly fond of any of the characters, but I really struggled with that with Skate Kitchen. It was just a film that kind of left me a bit cold, and I wasn't really particularly keen on sort of this lead character. Whereas was this one with Stevie, there was something about him where he just seemed like this just little kind of boy that was just off on sort of an adventure, and it was quite funny to watch his sort of transformation from little dweeby kid with sort of like his posters and bed to kind of this little gangster kind of thing. It was quite funny to see, and I just thought it was, yeah, I thought that it was such a kind of great cast, as you highlight. You know, Lucas Hedges has kind of gone from this very dorky kind of character actor for the most part to sometimes he's appearing in these quite henched built kind of characters. It's amazing that he has kind of found this interesting range in his films. You know, we saw it from Lady Bird to this, and then what we'll see in the future with Waves is that he is really good at kind of being someone of all different types and backgrounds.
Yeah, no, I mean, he is just like a pretty brutal character in this. I think the Honey Boy as well, he's really good in Honey Boy, and he's sort of playing the sort of same sort of range in that. It's like, you know, he's not a nice guy. I mean, because like the film almost basically starts with Stevie getting slammed quite viciously into the wall. I mean, the sound effects are really strong in this, especially when everyone falls off a skateboard. There's one moment in particular that the audience like collectively gasped or did an ooh, like if anyone's ever seen Spaced, when Tim and Daisy are watching the skateboarding videos where everyone falls off and they're just like, ah, it was that kind of brutal sort of face planting that is really good. But yeah, Lucas Hedges was good and a nice sort of counterbalance to the rest of them in that. And there was really sort of interesting family dynamics going on there between the three of them. And even though, you know, he did have a softer side, which he gets to show sort of later on, he's not a total douche, as it were.
Yeah. So what did you make of Sonny Suljic as a Stevie, or should I say Sunburn? We've got to previously see Sonny in The Killing of a Sacred Deer. What did you make of him in this performance?
I thought he was really good because I don't think I actually clicked initially that it was the same kid. I think I would have seen Sacred Deer before, but I didn't put the two and two together until sort of after the screening, I think. But yeah, no, he sort of starts off quite, yeah, like you say, quite dweebishy, but then he sort of puts on a beanie, starts slouching around, acting like he's all that because he's smoking and drinking a 2020 and stuff like that. And, you know, the relationships he has with all the different kids, you know, it's, you know, the one who initially brings him into the gang, they then have a falling out, which you can kind of tell is going to happen. But then it all kind of, you know, will come sort of full circle towards the end. So I thought he was really good. And, you know, he had a great relationship with Ray, who almost becomes like the older brother that he wishes he had rather than the one he's stuck with. So I thought he was great. And, you know, he's even got that sort of, you know, that wonderful scene where he's sort of telling the boys afterwards what happens when he has his first sexual encounter and stuff like that. It was really sort of really hilarious in that. And that whole sort of party scene was really well filmed, I thought. I thought the editing and stuff like that showed that Jonah Hill has some real talent, and he's someone that I would like to see direct again in the future, and I'm excited to see what he does next. And this is a complete sidebar, but I was watching The IT Crowd on Netflix recently, and Richard Ayoade is a director that I would love to see direct again, maybe even under A24. There's a match made in heaven. Richard Ayoade in A24, make it happen. Yeah, you know, he was in The Souvenir in that wonderful cameo. But yeah, Richard A24, if you're listening, please give Richard Ayoade some money to make a film again, because he's a director I want to see again. But also Jonah Hill, yeah, love to see what he does next.
As like a child of the 90s, how much did you relate to any of this kind of movie, the soundtrack, or your experience? Did you feel like, obviously there's a huge difference between Scotland in the 90s and Los Angeles?
Oh, well, I mean, the sun was exactly the same in Aberdeen in the mid-90s as it was in LA, but I remember I did have a skateboard in the late 80s, early 90s, but it wasn't like a good one. I think it was, I'd said I wanted a skateboard for like a Christmas and then got one which was like bright yellow and had like really big wheels and almost like bumper things along the side. I think I eventually did get a small one, but I was never really all that good. So I think I sort of kind of gave up on it quite quickly and then sort of was focusing more on the sort of gaming with like a SNES and stuff, which I just have pulled out of the cupboard and hooked up with an adapter to scale up to HDMI level, which I'll be playing on this lockdown. So SNES, NHLB, hockey, NBA Jam and stuff like that. That's where my memories of the 90s were. But I mean, certainly the low slung jeans, the wallet that had a chain on it, baggy t-shirts, yeah, that kind of stuff. I totally agree. And yeah, the sort of the soundtrack and stuff, that's what I really connected to. But the face planting off of a skateboard, I gave up on that pretty quickly. What about yourself?
Not too much, I suppose. I was still in primary school up until 1999, but it seems sort of this culture kind of continued on into the early 2000s in sort of Aberdeen and Aberdeenshire. You know, you would go into Aberdeen on a Saturday and you see people kind of, you know, on the kind of the skateboards kind of going down sort of like ramps and so on and kind of turning the city centre into like one big skate park. And as you say, the baggy jeans, the hanging kind of belts, etc. I thought all that was like, I could recognise that. My brother was more of a skateboarder, rollerblader than I ever was. And I remembered he would sort of make the music videos and sort of do the edits and so on. And they were all kind of particularly fond of that. But like, I thought the soundtrack, you know, was one of those things. It was like the Nirvana Unplugged that took me back. And I was talking about it to someone today that like house parties and sort of the early 2000s, it was like Nirvana Unplugged, Pearl Jam, Alice in Chains, these Unplugged soundtracks and like VHS tapes were always on in sort of the background. And it was just little touches like that that made me think, yeah, it's not something I can overly relate to too much. But as I said with sort of Lady Bird, it seems our generation, or if not a little bit older, the kind of millennial generation that are now becoming filmmakers are now making films that of what it was like to be to an extent to relate to in the 90s, early 2000s. And it's kind of good to see our generation sort of being represented on screen. You know, I probably was around sort of Sonny's age at that time. So yeah, it was a little moments like that always kind of made me smile as I could relate to or have flashbacks to it.
Yeah, no, it's something that A24 are really good at, is sort of, I hate to use the word period piece, but sadly it does seem that way, that the 90s and early 2000s are period pieces nowadays. But they do seem to be able to nail the tone, and they manage to get the right sort of music on and stuff like that. And I mean, it has to be said that it's the kind of thing which is kind of coming back. I know there's like in Aberdeen certainly, you've got like Transition Extreme, which has a skate park in it. There's like a guy who does like these Doric skateboards. And I mean, in London, it kind of never went away. If you're down in the South Bank, you can never escape the bit just next to the BFI cinema where they've got all the skateboarders doing their tricks and stuff like that. I know parkour seemed to take over for a while, but I think skateboarding does seem to be making a comeback. And I mean, Nirvana are one of those bands which have never really gone away. They've always been cool. Seal not so much, but maybe he'll make a comeback.
I'll tell you, that song is still cool. It's like one of the best kind of sing-along tracks. So yeah, I will not hear a bad word about Kiss from a Rose.
And hey, you know, it's from a Batman movie, so you know, it's always good.
There you go. So any final thoughts on mid-90s?
I mean, it's a film which I thought could have gone down the roads of potentially like, you know, like Larry Clark's Kids, especially when it got to the house party scene and there was sort of like drugs and then the awkward sex scene. I was like, oh, where's this going to go? Is it going to turn into, you know, one of these sort of violent sort of gang films? But I'm glad it kind of stuck with the core sort of group, and it was more about their friendship, and it was about Sonny sort of finding the sort of family that he struggled to have as a kid. And so, yeah, it was really sort of sweet, but, you know, it was... Jonah Hill nailed it in terms of the representation of the 90s. I think it's pitch perfect in terms of a film which sort of sums up the mid-90s essentially, and it does exactly what it says on the tin. And yeah, very excited to see what he does next.
So, all right, let's see if we're excited by what A24 does next, and that is Outlaws. So, when an Australian motorcycle gang leader is released from prison, he finds his former deputy on the cusp of giving control of their lucrative drug trade to a rival gang. When the deal goes south, the ensuing violence threatens to spin out of control as the gangs must contend with external threats and subversion within their own ranks, cultivating in a deadly face-off between the heavily armed crews. So, Dallas, what did you expect going into Outlaws, and when did you see it for the first time?
I saw it for the first time about a couple of days ago. It was one of those ones which I had to get off US iTunes only, so warning bells were ringing in my ears. And I have to say, I was expecting more bikes. You know, I was told this was about a biker gang, but they didn't really ride their motorcycles much. Maybe twice, if that, in the movie. For a gang of motorcycle guys, they seem more concerned about getting drunk and playing pool. They could have just been a pool gang instead. But for me, this was, I mean, I never had any huge expectations, so could I call it a disappointment? No, but it certainly is not a very good or very memorable film. I mean, to be honest, I watched this film and thought, this is someone who is trying to make Animal Kingdom, but has made a poor man's Animal Kingdom. David Michaud's Animal Kingdom, it came out maybe sort of 5-6 years ago. It's where I first discovered the king of character actors and cameos, Ben Mendelsohn. And it's about sort of like a brother sort of coming back from jail and sort of taking over the family crew again. And it, of course, spirals out and leads to violence. And it's essentially the same plot as Outlaws, but with a lot less male rape in it. So it was, yeah, not the film I was expecting. And when compared to other films, even sort of like Son of a Gun or The Rover, which are A24's other Australian set films, it just sort of pales in comparison to them. I couldn't really tell you the names of any of the characters, apart from, I think his name is meant to be Nook, but everyone in their Australian accent seemed to pronounce it like Canuck, which made it sound like he was a Canadian, but he's not. He's Australian. So yeah, a bit of a letdown for me, this one. What about yourself?
Yeah, this one was on my... I caught it last year, and I picked up as a sort of 99 cents rental. I remembered for the longest time this film was originally titled The 1%. And I was like, oh, right, that sounds interesting. I wonder if it's going to be like a, you know, an A24 film, maybe similar to The Big Short or something like that. I got something to say about the financial banking crisis, you know, all those sorts of things. I thought, I could see this sounds like an interesting A24 concept that I'd built up in my head, was looking forward to. And then I can't remember when it was that I was like, oh, right, it's a biker movie. And then it was renamed Outlaws, which, you know, okay, sure enough, you know, I'm still confused about the title, you know, change, but okay. But this was a film I didn't really enjoy. I thought this could have been an interesting sort of piece of sort of a B-movie kind of biker film or something like that. But it felt like this film was trying to be sort of like really darker, or like you have this bizarre subplot about sort of their leader trying to hide his homosexuality or anything like that by basically raping everyone in sight. And it's just really just all over the place and stuff. Like, you just watch and you just think, okay, this... I same as you, I'd hope, oh, I wonder if this could be an Animal Kingdom style thing. You know, we've had a few other kind of Down Unders films, but yeah, this was just a very kind of messy film. It was just, yeah, I don't see the appeal why A24 picked this up for their sort of direct TV kind of matchup.
Yeah, no, it's just messy is indeed the word. I think it's reaching for something grandiose in terms of its Shakespearean sort of pitting two men against each other for control of the tribe or the gang and stuff like that. But then, I mean, I don't know about you, but apart from maybe like three characters and the wives and girlfriends, they all kind of look like they're bald, bearded, and just have on these leather waistcoats. So when it got to the end where the gang was kind of fracturing into two, but then having this bloody face-off, I couldn't keep track of who was who and who was shooting who and if they were a good guy or a bad guy. It was all just very confusing. And yeah, I think, you know, it's bad to say, you know, obviously, you know, the 24 project, we're encouraging you to watch the entire back catalogue, but this is certainly one that you could almost possibly skip, and I would encourage you to rent Animal Kingdom instead, which is a 5-star classic.
Yeah, that would be really cool. I just think this one was just... I've kind of said it at sort of the start of the year. Let me get my little list up here. Where I just thought this was going to be a real... Like, I think 2019 was A24's best year for consistency. But you sort of look back to, you know, if we kind of maybe say... I don't know. Like, we've had, I would say, back in episode 39, so this is episode 57, but I remember every second episode is an interview as well, that we've very had few episodes where it's been like a proper good double bill, with Eighth Grade, which was strong, and then Hot Summer Night, which was decent, and then Never Going Back and A Prayer Before Dawn, both kind of enjoyable films. But it seems to be really up and down. You get like something like Lean on Pete, then Backstabbing for Beginners, First Reformed, like a classic film, followed by something like How to Talk to Girls at Parties, Hereditary, you know, a masterpiece, followed by like Women Walks Ahead. And it's just sort of like up and down, up and down. There's just sort of very little consistency. There's, you know, people talk about, oh, A24, every film of theirs is great, or, you know, this film is bad or that thing's bad. It just seems really an inconsistent period sort of in the A24 filmography at this time. And I really felt they sort of course corrected it in terms of, you know, output being high and after high in sort of the past year or so. 2018 and 17 was certainly a weird one, and I think that's the same with these two here.
Yeah, no, I think, yeah, if you look, I'm looking at the schedule myself, and yeah, I think you're probably looking at, you know, obviously we encourage you to listen to every episode, but I think once you hit episode 65, that's when things are going to get quite interesting again. But I think if it'd be quite interesting to look at which of the A24 films got a release in the UK, and if you did those films, I think you would have a much more interesting, I think you'd have a higher bar of quality in terms of double bills and stuff like that, because I think, yeah, you would almost be looking at First Reformed and Hereditary as an episode, and then maybe something like High Life and Eighth Grade together, you know, that kind of thing. That would be quite interesting, just to purely out of anecdotal things, just to, I might do that, and then we can discuss that in the next episode, the UK version. Obviously they were not released by the A24 in the UK, they all had different film distributors, but to look at that, I'd be thinking it'd be quite interesting to see if the UK as a whole is a good barrier, decide in terms of quality what they pick out the A24 catalogue to screen in the cinemas.
Yeah, I think that would be a really interesting one. I'm sure you'll find time in social isolation.
I love stats, to draw that. So I'm happy. I'll have it ready for the next episode.
If you want to hear a really good stat, I have one that I've just got like up my sleeve here. So I looked
just
this
up your sleeve, eh?
Up my sleeve. I looked this one up on Wikipedia, and under the reception section, in terms of box office, there is this cracking bit of trivia, and it has the film grossed $0 in worldwide theatrical box office and 76,151 with home video sales. $0, Dallas. What do you think of that? That comes from the website. Let's see if we can get up here. Thenumbers.com, which seems fairly reputable, where data and movie business meet. So yeah, that is let's look at that there. So domestic box office $0, international box office $76,151. It's a pretty interesting stats there. I'd love to know your thoughts on that one.
Yeah, domestic box office zero makes it sound like it actually was released in cinemas in the US and just nobody went to see it. I know that there's some cracking ones. Certainly in the UK, you sometimes get the odd film. I'm sure there was one like something like Run for Your Wife with Danny Dyer or something that was released like one screening in a cinema in central London. So it counted as having a theatrical release, and it was something like £37, or no, maybe something like £16. It was like one person bought a ticket, something like that. So yeah, I know there's quite a few. If you look at the UK, there's like that, but zero people in the entire US, which is quite a big city. I mean, I don't know how many screens it was released in, but that's quite a feat.
I think it probably just went straight to DirecTV in America, and I think maybe the 76,000 was maybe in Australia. That's maybe probably, my yeah. feeling. Yeah, so maybe yeah, it's Australian.
The
dollars.
Families of the cast and crew in America, in Australia.
I keep thinking like it was what 70,000 like the original winner of Big Brother got in the UK. So like that's pretty much like the prize like they got. So yeah, I don't know why that came up to my head, but that is the line I'm drawing between Outlaw and Craig, who won Big Brother One in the UK.
Well, I'll look to do that as well. I'll do a ranking of box office releases as well in A24. See if it tallies up with our 5-star ratings.
Absolutely. So any final thoughts on Outlaw?
I still say give it a miss and watch Animal Kingdom instead.
Yeah, wise idea. But next week we've got kind of two very interesting films to dive into. We have Climax and The Hole in the Ground. So have you seen any of these before, Dells?
I have not. I did see Climax, the clip of the beginning, which had a soundtrack on it, which I've just suddenly gone and forgotten what it was. But it was a very funny video that I was watching. Why have I forgotten which one it was?
It's one of those ones, it's like an amazing, opens with an amazing dance number that has been quite heavily memed since. So you are, yeah, you're in for a treat watching that one for the first time. And The Hole in the Ground, I'll tip off one of your Hole in the Women.
I haven't seen that one either, but, that's good, yes. I do need to get back into that. I've been a bit lax recently, but I've kind of just, with everything that's going on, it's been difficult to muster up the energy to watch films at the moment. But these are both on Netflix, so I'll be doing a double bill of those in the next week or so, and really looking forward to seeing them. I think quite different. I mean, Gaspar Noé, he's a character, so yeah. And I'd heard reasonable things about The Hole in the Ground. Will it classify as one of A24's elevated horrors? I guess I'll find out.
There you go. So join us in 2 weeks' time as we look at those two films, and we'll be back again next week with one of our interviews. So until then, over and out.